Is we live? Yes, yes, you're now tuning to the Red Podcast. Of course, I'm your host of the most, NK, aka the man of the hour, too sweet to be sour. And we are back for another episode of the Red Podcast. But we are not alone. We are joined by a very special guest, somebody I've wanted on the show for a very, very long time. I'm going to let her introduce herself. Madam, do the honors. Tell the people who you are.
The thing is, I can't intro myself the way you introduced yourself. So this is very short, very sweet. Hi, I'm Melissa D, radio presenter, host. What else do I do? Producer, mm-hmm. accountant, mm-hmm. Just creator. Trying to survive, content creator. Mm-hmm. Just at it, really. Do you know what I mean?
Nah. She is like one of the best presenters. I told her this to her face when we met at Love Soul, but your ability to control a room, to dictate conversation.
I can't do this. Is this going to be the pod? I can't do this. No, I can't take compliments like that.
First of all, I'm always about giving people their flowers while they're here to receive them.
Thank you.
And I've always been like, this podcast started off like, I'll even give you the origin story of that, where this podcast started. This podcast started because in uni, when I joined the society, Urban Creative Society, where it's just like a bunch of like, Black creatives.
Why was it urban? Can I ask what was urban creatives?
I don't know. We just wanted to attract the blacks in it. So
that word is like what's it called? A Batman signal. What's that called?
The bat signal.
Yeah, the bat signal. Literally urban.
And then the way even the name Rare Podcast is an acronym for something. It means real art, real expression.
Okay. And
in uni, we had these grand ideas of like having the podcast division, the music division, the Rare Tech Tech. Obviously, life happens, innit? Yeah. But I say all that to say that like the basis of this podcast is to platform creatives and platform people with talent. And you, madam, fit into that category tenfold, innit?
So, that. You know, that.
Yeah, like I think it's always just important to like highlight like what you do and so on and so forth, innit? So,
thank you. I'm blushing now. No, thank you. Thank you very much, man. It's been a long journey. But we met at Love Soul's event, an amazing R&B event, mind you. Lovely treehouse session. You go in, it's like the shortest venue. It's like beautiful. You feel like you're in a jungle, you're in the Amazon. It's lovely. But what we do, we basically pick an R&B album, like a classic, a neo-soul R&B album, and we just talk about it and we review it. But also, you get to play games. And also, you get to like share your playlist with people. And also, you get to bring your own drink, which I also like at venues because I'm like, I can control what I'm drinking. I paid for this. This is what I'm going to drink.
Yeah.
You know, but it's just a lovely, it's community building. It's providing that third space that people have been asking for so long. And we just center it around music.
No, honestly, because I came to Love Soul kind of not on the whim, but obviously I knew Rashawn, big up Rashawn, and then she was like, yeah, come to our event. I thought, because when I initially came, because I know Love Soul do the Treehouse event and they do Love Soul Lounge. So I initially thought, okay, it's gonna be Love Soul Lounge. But when I came to the Treehouse event, I was like, I was pleasantly surprised, and I was like, no, I need this more, because I feel like what you said about community building is so important.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of times when it comes to like musical discourse, it's the barrier of online. It's like, hey, a lot of people are chatting online, but you don't really get to share your like musical passions with some of your friends sometimes. Mm. And you want to build a community of people who are like-minded, who have interesting opinions. And I've learned so much.
Our discussions are so honest. And also what I really like about it is people allow themselves to be vulnerable and really open up when we're talking about music, because of course art provokes emotion. That's what it's there for. So a lot of these songs resonate with people differently, and people are like so brave to talk about some of the things they talk about, like obviously not putting anyone on blast or nothing, but people really dig deep about like their own issues and traumas and situations in relationships. And it's like, wow, we brought you here just to actually talk about music. And now here you are sharing your life. It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful event for real.
But that's what art's for, though. And
true.
I feel like that's what art's for. Yeah, of course, we listen to music. We consume art one time on an entertainment basis. Mm. But sometimes these pieces, these works really stick with us and invoke feelings within us. So it's important to have a space where, yeah, like let's really discuss and break down the art, not only from like a technical perspective, but from an emotional perspective as well.
I'm saying, like, I think those discussions are so necessary because, and I know we're going to get onto it, like we speak a lot about like great artists in terms of accolades, statistics, popularity, all of that. But we never really have those discussions about, do you know what? This album genuinely sat with me and took me back to this age, or it made me feel this so deeply. We never talk about the emotions behind it, the feelings behind it. And that is what the discourse mainly is when we're at a Treehouse session, to be fair.
Nah, man. Big up, Love Soul. We're waiting. Listen, I'm waiting for the next Treehouse. I'm literally loading.
I'm literally there.
Listen, like we will put the link in the bio below. Like I'm somebody. I go religiously. I'll be there every time.
This one. Let me tell you. So I walk in, because obviously I'm hosting it. So I walk in, I'll be like, yeah, cool, NK's going to be here. Maybe like 5 minutes. 5 minutes passes. Okay, he's probably running late. He walks in. Okay, there you are. Absolutely. Why would you not be here?
Because I love it. Because I genuinely, like, I don't think you understand, like, it's genuinely scratched the itch that I've, it scratched the itch that I didn't know I needed.
I love that.
Because for me, like, I have a podcast and yeah, there's so many things that I want to talk about. But just being in a community, in a space of people, like, literally, even the games like you host in the beginning.
The games are so good. Let me break down one of the games that we have here. So we have a game. It's like a situational game. So I will say, give me a song that you would play if you are getting ready for a night out with your girls. It's about to be girls night. What's the best song you play? And the two teams basically battle it out to give us their best song. But we listen to all of the options. And it's just fun because people play a song and it's like, oh my God, I forgot about that song. And like people debate how relevant the song is to the situation. We're just vibing. We are literally just having a good time. I love it so much.
Yeah, no, definitely check it out. But before we get into like the main topics of today, yeah, we like to do a little segment called Rare Moment of the Week.
Yeah.
We like to spotlight creatives in any field that we feel deserve the accolades, deserve the flowers, deserve the praise. Melissa, do you have a rare moment of the week?
I do have a rare moment of the week. I am literally knocking on this mic. I have a rare moment of the week and I want to shout out someone who I have seen absolutely grind, work so hard, like keep her head down, lock in, focus, but still be so available to help and bring up other people. And the proof is in the pudding with where she's at. I am shouting out Isra today on the podcast, brand new presenter on Capital Extra. She has literally, like, if you follow Isra's journey, she has been working hard. And I think it's just a case of when pure talent, like pure undeniable, you cannot tell me that girl is not talented at what she does. She's fantastic. When that meets opportunity and hard work, like, it's her time. So, and I'm gushing because obviously I'm her friend and she's just great anyways, but that's my real moment.
Big up Isra. She's hilarious as well.
She's like, amazing.
I've seen her. I think she's got a podcast on Word of the Curb with Kimberly Cumberbatch and other people, and she's hilarious. Even when she goes into like she impersonates like her mom or like aunties and stuff like that.
But she's so authentically herself. Yeah. That's what's so amazing about it. And like, it's something I always try to tell people. Like, a lot of the times as presenters, you get people asking you, oh my God, what's some advice you can give? What helped you as you were coming up? It's literally trying not to be like anyone else. Be so authentically you that gap that's missing, only you can fill that gap. That's all it is. Be you, bro. No one else is going to be you like you can be you.
Nah, for sure. For sure. Big up, Isra. My rare moment of the week is the Post Credit Scene podcast. Those are my guys. They are a film and television-based podcast, and I honestly think they're the best in the game in the UK when it comes to film and TV coverage, when it comes to interviews, film discussions. Like, I'm somebody, like, I studied film and TV at uni.
Oh, okay.
But I go to their podcast and I learn so much. I learn, like, those guys, when I say those guys are, like, film fans, and it's a range. Like, they'll cover, like, the most obscure indie film to a Marvel movie, and it will just be a seamless, cohesive unit. And I just love, like, what they're doing and what they stand for, innit? So, like, bear of them have been on a podcast.
Shout them out one more time so I can
Post-credit scene podcast, man. Post-credit scene podcast. Big up Manny, Gaz, Bisola, Huss, Jason. If I've missed someone out, apologies. But like, genuinely top tier content.
Lovely.
Production levels are high. High.
That's
just
what we love.
We love to see it, man. We love to see it. Big them up.
Accolades.
Big them up.
Accolades.
But you, Melissa, presenter,
Chai.
Yapa.
Yapa. Yapa. There we go. That's, do you know, at work the other day, yeah, we had to do our bio, isn't it? And like talk about, oh, who are we? Like, describe yourself to the team. I just put yapa. Like, that's what I do. Get paid to yap, really and truly.
So how did that, so were you like, were you a yapper from childhood? And how did that yapping like lead to like, you know, your career as a presenter? Like, what was the spark? What was the origin story that made me say, you know, let me pick up a mic and, you know, talk to people. Talk to me.
Okay. So it's actually really funny that I am now a presenter, let alone a host who is on stage doing these things. So as when I was really young, again, doesn't seem like it, but my brother knew this very well. I didn't like talking to people in terms of like asking someone at the shop, like, hey, how much is this? Like, oh, can you help me with this? I was very shy to do that. I made him do it all for me. So that was one part, which is why it's so ironic that this is my career. But I'm actually a chartered accountant. Mm-hmm. I didn't go to uni. I said, oh, I don't want to go to uni. What can I do? So instead I said, let me just start an apprenticeship. I did that. Did that for like 4 or 5 years. Got it, by the grace of God. And then something in me was like, I can't see myself doing this for the rest of my life. There's something about being in corporate for a little while when you know it's not you, that's like, I don't fit. I think that was it. I didn't feel like I fit. I didn't feel like I feel fulfilled in this. I feel like I'm happy making a difference. Can I swear on this?
Yeah, of course.
I didn't give a toss. I didn't give a toss. I'd be in meetings. I'm like, guys, I don't give a heck about anything we're talking about. So then I was like, okay, Mel, what do you enjoy? And music has always been a passion of mine, particularly R&B. And I love relationship building. I love, you know, we talk about music. I love this, relating to people on a certain level. And I said, what brings those two things together? Yeah, radio. Absolutely, it's radio. So then I started doing my research. And then, yeah, man, like... here we are still. Man,
it's honestly a gift. Like I said, like, I know I'm not going to bombard you with compliments, but you're good at what you do. I'll keep it brief.
Thank you.
I'll keep writing brief. You're good at what you do. Even let's touch on the music, because like what got you into music? Was it like family? Were you always listening to music? Or did you go through like a period of like discovery where you just like started banging it out? Like, talk to me about your music journey. Man.
So first and foremost, shout out. Shout out to my dad, because he started my love of R&B. I'm an R&B head through and through. The UK R&B side came as a discovery piece, mainly through lockdown. I think I'd had these artists on my playlist before. I was listening to like your Etta Bond, your Ellie Ingram, your Shea Universe, your Jerome Thomas, your Jack James. I had them on my playlist, but I was never like, oh, you lot are from down the road. You lot are local. I never put two and two together until I started discovering this. And I was like, oh, there are a lot of you that are really this good. Why is no one, hello, up in your ears? There's a lot happening. And then I think during lockdown, that's when I was like, okay, cool. I hear a lot of discussion about UK R&B and people are like, I don't know where to find it. So I was like, okay, let me help. Let me do my little two pence. And that's when I started like Melly's Monday Melodies, which was like a discovery page, and I'd play like 5 UK R&B songs a week to put people on. And like, yeah man, that's when my love of UK R&B,
honestly, I think UK R&B is a ridiculously strong scene. Like, hey. I think this is my hot, I think it's a stronger scene top to bottom than the rap scene. It's just the rap scene has way more commercial appeal, like, honestly, that's central scene. But in terms of the diversity of artists, my God, like, uh-huh, just the success. Like, I said this with Big Up Fanola, but I said this when Fanola was here. Fanola
every time.
I literally used to watch El Mean on TikTok live.
Covers.
Covering, yep. Singing, doing duets on TikTok. Yep. Next minute, I'm seeing him on Tiny Desk.
It's fantastic.
Next minute, I'm seeing him in songs with the Shea Universe on a Tiny Desk.
Hello.
Like,
hello.
K1 as just out of, you know what I'm saying, even that Jazz Caris and all of these, like,
Cleo Soul. Like, after Cleo Soul's show, I saw a tweet that really made me like, hello, something needs to happen here. There needs to be a shift. It was someone from the US and they were like, oh, we just need UK artists here in New York. Because they were like, oh, the next person I need is Sasha Keeble. And then someone else was like, we just need all of them just to come. Like, your Debbie, your K1, your Shay, your Bella, your Neo, your... all of them to come over. And I was like, look at the demand on the other side of the pond. And they're probably going to mobilize a lot quicker
than us.
But I it's an infrastructure thing. We are all very aware that it's an infrastructure thing. But it's like, it's frustrating that that infrastructure can see demand and say, all right, we're going to bank, we're going to hone in on that and get more eyes on it. As opposed to here, we work backwards and we're like, what has more eyes? That's what we're going to hone in on. They don't look at the potential of the eyes that you could get if you invest in it.
Perfect segue. For me, do you, specifically in the UK, I think in the UK, we have a problem with, like what you said, popularity, where we determine an artist's viability through solely their popularity, not necessarily their ability to like curate a small audience and their popularity. And for a wider conversation in music, I feel like a lot of music fans, they don't value, let's say, the artistry, they value the popularity. And this has the, this goes to the conversation we had at Big Up Sink the Beat. They had their live show, amazing live show. I was a panelist. Melissa was She was a panelist that day. I don't care. She was a panelist just on the other side of the table.
I was supposed to be a panelist, but do you know when you're not like ready? I was like, I'm actually feeling very shy today, so I'm gonna stay. But then things were said, and I said, run that mic. Give me that mic.
Yeah.
Had to do
but
it.
There was a whole conversation about what qualifies an artist to be the greatest of all time.
Yes, a lot
of the metrics used is popularity. How important is popularity when determining the, what's the word? English is escaping me today.
sometimes do or die.
When determining how good an artist is their popularity the primary thing you look at, or is there a wider conversation to be had?
It's just so tough though, isn't it? Because like, there was a point in time where you could say someone like your Jasmine Sullivan was not the most popular artist in R&B, but she had the best ability. Are you joking? She had the best ability. But even within that popularity conversation, it's like, are we looking at the fact that they can still pull a crowd and sell out shows because they've got very devoted fans? Do you know what I mean? Like, there's popularity in that way where your fans are going to consistently show up for you. But then it's popularity about like visibility on a global scale, on a wider scale, where it's kind of like, that's what we focus on. So like, an artist can be popular and be like, I don't know how I'm trying to word this. An artist can be popular, but I can't land this. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, no, I know what you're trying to say. And I feel like, and also the point you made up about like having dedicated fans, we sometimes look at billions of streams, we look at that as the metric. Do you know how mad it is, yeah, for you to fly to another country and there is about 1,000 people who've paid money to come and see you? Yeah. Like, I don't think people put into context how insane that is.
It's a lot.
Somebody knows that you're from a different place. They've paid for your travel. They've, you know, given you an itinerary, and you've got dedicated fans spending their hard-earned money to see someone who's not from their country to sing your songs. Like, people, I feel like people are too gassed up, and stadium tours and stuff like that deserve the accolades. But somebody being able to do Brixton Electric when they're from Australia, or someone from England going to Norway to do a show, that's insane.
That's popularity. That is still a form of popularity. And I think that should still be within the conversation of like, what makes you, is that part of your great artistry? I think it kind of is. The fact that you're able to relate to so many different pockets of people, does that make sense? Like, you're not just a sensation in your own hood. That is important. Let your hood love you. But the fact that you've managed to touch people outside of that, that's great reach. Yeah, you have great artistry. You've related to people. That's part of it, I think, anyways.
So what are your personal metrics for greatness?
Okay. A great artist for me has to have, and we're talking about artistry in terms of music.
Yes.
A great musical artist.
Yes, music artist, yes.
Vocal ability. And if we're going to include rappers, talents, you know? Just have talent. I think, so Taylor Swift for me, right, is popular. Popular in the way of, yes, she's got global popularity, but also she relates to a lot of people. She's very relatable. She's popular in that way. I don't necessarily think she's great vocally. I think she's got the metrics because of her relatability, not because of the talent. Whereas my girl Beyonce, yeah? People analyze her runs. People, how many people are sat there like, oh my God, that run in, oh, I can hear the song in my head. It's the way you plastic off the sofa. People are analysing her vocal ability and saying she's running gymnastics, she's running circles around people, right? You've got that vocal talent and that helps you get the metrics, but she's also relatable. So that is also helping her get the metrics. So for me, it's talent, it's performer. Are you a good performer? Longevity. Like, can you stand the test of time? Can your art stand the test of time? And then I don't want to say the statistics. I don't want to say like how many albums you've sold or how many streams you've got or whatever. So I'd say for me, it's those three. How well can you perform? How can you stand the test of time? Like, is your music still relevant in different periods? And are you talented? I think that's it for me.
Yeah, I think I agree with you with the Taylor Swift thing.
I agree.
I think obviously, like, if you want to see me rant about go on a mad tirade about Beyonce, listen to the Sink the Beat
listen
podcast.
You will beehive. I said, I didn't know your game. I wasn't familiar with
it. Do you know what
game,
it is? I'm like beehive adjacent. I'm not quite I'm not quite fully beehive a member.
Commit, man. No, it's good on this side.
But some of y'all get mad at me at some of my takes, like some of my Beyonce takes. I think she's the GOAT, but okay, I don't really like Cowboy Carter like that.
Neither did I.
Renaissance was hit and miss for me. See?
Yeah, move on, man.
You see, that's how I can't be. I'm a cousin.
Roll
I'm
the
a
next
cousin.
Topic.
I'm a cousin. I love you lot. You're like, that's my it. Second.
Renaissance was a hit and miss.
Hit and miss for me.
That album is like no misses, like not a single miss. Top to bottom, you play it through.
Okay. I hated Break My Soul. Like, I hate that song.
I can listen to that a cappella
version. I hate that song. And there's other... Okay, you want me to do my Beyonce?
No, go ahead. Talk your talk.
Some, not all. Some of... Like, okay, no. It's the deep cut ballads I love, but some of the more commercial ballads I despise. I don't like Halo. I'm sorry. Yeah, you see?
Halo, Halo, Halo.
You see? This is why I'm adjacent.
Yeah, stay there, man. You're not beehive. Yeah, man.
However,
you're close.
My favorite Beyonce song is Greenlight, so.
That's a great pick. I think B-Day is like my favorite Beyonce album of all time.
Ridiculous. But
the one where she's screaming. That's her screaming album. Tell me, how should I have a girl? At ease, my queen. Just bring it down. Love it. Yeah, I love that album.
I love it. But yeah, I think for me, when it comes to, do you know what it is? Mm. Very few artists have all of those metrics. And I feel like Beyonce, MJ, are in a class where they have all of them. I think for me, great, you get into the greatness conversation where you have like four of them because you'll be missing one. Mm. Some people are missing one. I think for me, when it comes to music, albums. So, sometimes longevity is important in terms of, hey, if you've been here for decades and still killing it, but do you have identifiable pieces of work? So, for example, I rate people that can construct full bodies of work rather than being like a career hit maker.
Chris Brown. Okay.
That's why, like, for me, when it comes to the Usher, Chris Brown debate, I always pick Usher because Usher has like two undeniable classics for me.
Very identifiable, undeniable, clear classics.
Clear classics. And if you want to add like, the Raymond v. Raymond
not too much.
It's a good album. It's a good album, but when I put it next to the others, and then but two undeniable classics. Mm. So for me, that weighs higher than a Chris Brown, who's a career hit maker.
Got you. Okay.
It ranks differently because do you know how hard it is to get me to listen to a project top to bottom, and the majority of the project, not only do I like, but have a theme, have a topic, have a sound.
That's artistry.
It's art. It's artwork.
Yeah.
Because you've literally painted an entire picture.
Yeah. But I guess that's the drama comes when we start getting these 30 song long albums. I think it's quite difficult to construct a story and a theme when you're doing that, because at that point you are just churning out.
Yeah.
I think anyways, at that point you are just putting out hits, because we spoke about this earlier and I was like, if you throw out 50 hits, something's going to stick. And it just feels like that's what it gives to me. When you do like a 30 song album, it's like you think something's going to stick. There's not real thought that's gone into it. But the question I had for you, actually, as we're talking about like longevity, talent and bodies of work. So someone like Tracy Chapman, a lot of people hail Tracy Chapman as like one of the greatest of all time. Mm. Fast Cars. We still listen to Fast Cars now. We still love and appreciate what it was. But it's just the one song that mainly people call out. But, you know, and then Lauryn Hill.
Yes.
Also hailed as one of the greatest of all times with one album under her belt.
Lauryn Hill's an interesting one, right? Because I also count the score in her discography.
Okay.
I also count that. So for me, she has like one solo, one group album. It's an interesting one. But then it then another metric is influence.
Okay. Did she have sons afterwards? And she did.
And she has. There's she has a whole. Put this way, there's a whole aesthetic.
Yeah.
There's a whole sound attached to Lauryn.
But that aesthetic was also growing because she was. That was when the neo soul tribes were growing. Yes. So it was kind of like she fit in very well, and then it just exploded.
Lauryn for me isn't my goat personally. Yeah. Okay. But I don't begrudge people for. I don't know. It's weird.
We spoke about this at Love Soul. So we actually reviewed The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. And we spoke about, is that one of the greatest albums of all time? Can we then put her as one of the greatest artists of all time?
It's the Lauryn Hill conversation is an interesting one because I feel like I like people. When people put on the greatest rapper conversation, I can't entertain it. And the reason why I can't entertain it is because, especially when it comes to hip hop, like Lauryn doesn't have the bodies of when it comes to rap, rap is very much a genre. Your penmanship, your creativity over a sustained period of time. For me, when it comes to hip hop, I rate that highly. Like, can you come back with different subject matters and so on and so forth? That's what people rate Nas, because Nas has Illmatic and other projects where he consistently comes back. That's why people rate Jay-Z 444, because he rapped from a perspective of an older rapper.
Like, you can tell he's growing up, his music is growing up.
So with Lauryn, it's like, yeah, you have an album that very much captures a perspective. I think with Lauryn, she's like, she managed to blend rap and her singing into like one just phenomenal piece of work. But I wouldn't consider a goal in each category separately.
I hear that. Do you know what? I do hear that, because no one looks at Drake and says, Drake is a goat in singing.
No.
It's rap that people consider him the goat in. It's literally just rap, but he blends the both of them.
Yeah, it's hard for me to restrict Lauryn Hill to just the rapper or just the singer when she does both at such an expert level. I think, like, in terms of, if you want to talk about people who rap and sing, she's the best. Because she's an actually, actually can sing.
Dochi can sing.
Yeah, Dochi can sing. Dochi can sing.
Dochi can sing. We don't hear it enough, but Dochi can sing.
Because an underrated song on Alligator Bites Never Heal was Slide. That song,
Slide is good.
Slide is a good song.
We play that on my radio show. Come check me out at 89.6 FM, West Side Radio. Thank you.
Say it again.
Come check me out on West Side Radio, 89.6 FM, from 10 AM to 1 PM, Monday to Wednesday. You can catch me, Melissa D, playing nothing but good R&B.
You know, Dochi can sing, but Dochi's more like, People praise her for like songs like Nissan Ultima, Spooky Coochie,
Persuasive. But these are great songs. Yeah. We're all singing them. Yeah. TikTok songs.
But I think with Lauryn Hill, it's like, you will sing the Lauryn Hill chorus and you'll be rapping your ass off at the same time.
Yeah, Fez. Like, you do what? That thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you'll be doing both at the same time and it's like, what? Yeah. Like,
Ad libs and all.
But then, I, like I said, bodies of work. Okay, I put Fuji's The Score up there as well, because that album is just, I feel like that's what, I don't like when people remove that from her discography, because it is a part of her discography.
Interesting.
It is a part. Yes, we have to big up Wyclef for just the sound itself. Of course, have to. But she was a pivotal part.
Yeah, no, she was a part of it. So then in that case, yeah, back to like the popularity being part of that conversation. Where does Lauryn Hill's popularity play a part in her? Like, if we're going to use that as a metric for her, we said someone has to have four at least. So she's got, the album has longevity.
Yes.
We're still playing it.
Yes.
She's got, what else did we say? We said talent. She's got the talent. Clear. Stats? I don't know the stats on that album.
I don't know the stats on that album specifically, but I do remember, for example, when Apple Podcast did their greatest albums of all time, it was her album was number one.
It's literally number one. Okay, so popularity.
She's got that iconic photo of her holding the Grammys like this. Mm. And in terms of popularity, it's weird. I don't think she's... It's weird because obviously, like, I very much caught her music. I wasn't old enough to deep her music in her prime. Yeah. So a lot of the stuff is hindsight. But for me, I don't think it's outrageous to say that she didn't reach the popularity of like a Nicki Minaj, for example.
Okay.
I don't see it. I'm getting a look.
That side eye is serious.
It's looking serious. So apparently, but this from the outside looking in. Pre-social media, true.
Different time. Your age group is
that's fair. Pre-social media, that's fair.
About that though. When we were talking about again, Sync the Beat Pod Live, shout out to them. When we were having this discussion about like greatest artists of all time and like stats and stuff, and we were talking about like the Drake stats versus the MJ stats, it was kind of like, well, the stats of today feel a bit more padded. They feel a bit less real, I want to say, because I feel like there was a lot more effort and work that came to achieving the stats of yesteryear.
Yeah.
You know, album sales, we are physically going out with my hard-earned money to purchase these things.
And queuing.
Yes, I'm still paying to like, to buy the albums now, but it's not the same. It's just from my phone. Where's my phone? I can literally click, done. It's not the same.
The prices, I remember early like HMV, see albums for like maybe like £9 to £15,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That's the same. One album is costing you the entirety of your subscription.
True.
With one album, I'm buying one album and that is the same price as listening to thousands of different albums on my phone. Like, it's different. I feel like, yeah, the stats of today, while impressive, like, for me, it's incomparable.
We need to... I don't personally include that when I'm talking about, oh, my God, this makes a massive artist. Oh, mm-hmm. my God, this is one of the greatest artists of all time. I don't think it's fair.
Yeah, I don't know. But the popularity argument, it's always... People always use, oh, my God, numbers and stats. And to a degree, it is important because a lot of the Michael Jackson conversation is about, like, Thriller. Yeah, I don't care. It will always be the highest-selling album ever. I don't care what person tops it today. It was the highest selling album for how many years for one Mickey Mouse person to come on top it today. And
so
it's the highest selling album ever, and it'll always be. But yeah, that is a stat. Level of stat, you have to value, and it has to be brought into the conversation. But at the same time, when you can't reduce Michael's career to just stats. And I feel like a lot of people, what they do with their artists to justify their artist's greatness, they'll be like, yeah, but they did this, so they're automatically good. Where it's like, respectfully, Gangnam Style went triple billion. So, if we want to bring numbers into this,
Psy is like top two.
He's top two. Do you know what I'm saying?
Might as well put him in the GOAT conversation.
It has to be, for me, greatness has to be how you influence people that make your work as well. Because that's so important, because that means other your peers, the people that do the same thing
you're
as you.
You're popular amongst them as well.
They see value in your work to where I've learned something from you that I want to emulate. Yeah. And sometimes that's not easily trackable, but that means you have to be a fan, a consumer of the medium itself. And I feel like a lot of the times in music conversations and stuff like that, we look at stats, but I can Google a stat today. I don't have to consume the music. What? How does that make me a fan?
True.
I'm not engaging with the work in any like real way. I'm just looking at a number and saying, okay, because it did this
because
number.
Because he sold this, he must be great.
He must be
That's
good.
It.
And
That's
end the
opinion.
Conversation there. We're not looking at, okay, like, you know, if we're looking at a rapper, his rhyme scheme, his rhyme pattern, we're not analysing the art form. Yeah. And I feel like this goes into a wider conversation about society, but more so about music. I feel like a lot of consumers not have gotten lazy, but people don't want to try to. Yeah, people don't want to try.
People don't want to work anymore. Word to Kim K. Nobody wants to work anymore.
People don't want to try. And we had this conversation about, like, I believe gatekeeping is important.
Go on, expand.
I believe gatekeeping is important. I feel like, don't get me wrong, all mediums should be able to be, should be enjoyed by everyone if they want to do, if they want to enjoy it. However, you're not going to come, for example, I'm not going to come into the medium of R&B and be like, vocals don't matter. Anybody can be an R&B singer.
That's absolutely insane. I'm not,
but people will come into a meet, and what happens is that when you make the medium accessible to everyone, it cheapens the medium a little bit. It cheapens it a little
great
bit.
Great conversation. And we have it a lot around, like right now we are talking about music. Yeah. I think it's the entire creative field.
Yes.
I think over the past couple of years, there's been a shift. It's literally just a shift of where the eyes are. Wherever the eyes are, that's where like the opportunities are, whatever. So it's kind of like now you have a lot of people going into these areas, like you said, and it's kind of like, well, you don't have to have the talent. I just want to do it, so I'm going to do it. And fairs, do you know what? I can't stop anyone from doing anything, but it does make the field then look like, oh, this ain't that hard. But it is. No, it actually is quite hard, you know. This is work. People have worked for a long time to become good at their craft, and they work on their craft and they become better. And there's a science to, not even a science to it, but there's an art to it. There's a certain love and respect that people have for it. And so they try to be better. They take the training, they look at their peers, they look at the goats, and they continue to better themselves in it to give you this art, to give you this type of thing. And I think I saw something, it was ages ago, it's like Ethan Hawke saying, right now, casting directors are telling him that like someone has to have X amount of followers for them to be in the film. And I'm like, that's crazy. That's insane. But that's where we're headed. It's where the eyes are.
And what I mean by gatekeeping, it doesn't mean necessarily, because I know gatekeeping can have negative connotations and can be negative in terms of like, hey, you're restricting, you know, potential, you know, great contributors to the genre because they're not adhering to certain principles, right? That's fair. But I feel like, especially as tastemakers, for example, like people who talk about movies, who talk about film,
music, art,
there has to be like some sort of an appreciation. It might not necessarily be a checklist of stuff, but for example, if I'm having a conversation about the history of R&B, right, and you've like, I don't know who Mary J. Blige is. Like, what conversation can we really have? Yeah, no. Your opinion as a newcomer might be valid in terms of, hey, I'm someone who hasn't listened to this genre. Hey, this is my opinion. That's fine. But when we're having a conversation about the principles of the genre itself and you know, haven't listened to impactful, pivotal works, I'm not saying you have to listen to every album. I'm just saying if there's a blatant disregard for what's come before and the principles of the genre, and then you want to now be a voice in that space, I kind of find it mad.
It's kind of looking funny in the light. It's kind of like what you said, at that point that you made when you said someone can come into, like, let's say you want to come into the R&B space and now you're like, vocals don't matter. I think it's like, I think that's insane. Particularly for something like R&B, you're basically coming in and taking one of the core principles of crooning R&B, which is the vocals, it is the voice, and saying, no, it doesn't matter. Well, then I personally don't think, you can't really call it R&B then, innit? You're blending and building something else that's outside of that. And I think that's a different conversation that we then have in, like, people always say R&B is lost, like we're not really doing the same style of R&B anymore. And I think it's because of a lot of this. It's like people love the sound, but they interpret it their own way. And it's like, okay, vocals don't really matter. I don't need to be good at vocals, but maybe my production is the most important thing. Maybe if I can make this catchy as heck, I can do it. So you're building something outside of that. Like it's like a subgenre now. And that's when a lot of people are like, oh, R&B doesn't sound the same anymore. No, because there's different interpretations now.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
There's different, it's weird because it's a hard conversation, because as much as, like I said, like I believe in gatekeeping, it's hard because if something stays the same, it can get stagnant and there's no point of evolution.
Yeah, no, I do agree. But I also like, I'm sounding like this, but it's just because there are so many points so many different either strands, way. Yeah. Because I do think then if you come and you interpret it your own way, you can't now come to say, yeah, I'm doing like the pure R&B. You lot wanted R&B, here's your R&B. So, no.
So would you put, okay, let's, within the genre R&B, because it's a great conversation, when we talk about R&B, people can conflate you in the same conversation. Mm. You can have a Jasmine Sullivan and, let's say, a Bryson Tiller. People put them all under the bracket of R&B when one is like a traditional vocalist, and Bryson Tiller rose onto the scene because he was singing over trap beats. But his modulated voice, not the strongest vocalist in the world. If you were to put Bryson in the 90s, he wouldn't survive. Do you know what I'm saying?
But for now, the demand is there. He's reached an audience that like that type of sound. He's taken traditional R&B, interpreted it his own way, and now there's a subgenre. What's it called? It's trap soul.
People call it, I think now the new term is like dark R&B.
Every day there's a new term
I think the new term, from what I see, the new term people say is like dark R&B. So Party Next Door falls into it. Tory Lanez falls into it. Early Black falls into it.
Six Lack,
he falls into it. And so Bryson falls into it. Yeah,
he's done that and gone that way. So it's like, okay, cool. Oh, I want to listen to some dark R&B. Great, cool. I'll put that on. And then you know you're not talking about your Jasmine Sullivan or your Ari Lennox or whatever. Like, I think it's okay for the subgenres to be there. And like, do you know what I mean? For people.
But I feel the subgenres are important, but I feel like people now start to conflate the two.
And just say, oh, R&B.
This is R&B. Which technically, yes, because technically it makes sense.
Your argument that's coming.
Yeah.
It makes sense because it's like, yeah, like, it is a big umbrella. Like, there are a lot of you doing it. But then it's kind of like, if we're going to keep it to what it was, it's differed so much.
I got me and Fanola got flamed online because we said we didn't like Chicks Tapes from Tory Lanez.
No, I didn't either. We said this at the Sick the Box.
We said this at Sick the Beat. Thank you.
I didn't like it.
Look, but, and that's, not to sound like an elite, but that's the issue. Because... What happened, like I said, people will be like, but it's not an album, it's a mixtape, whatever, mixtape, sample, beats or whatever. But the thing is about when people say that, oh, that is a major contribution to R&B, or that's like a, people love Chicks Tapes. Like, we heard it on Sick the Beat, like, people love Chicks Tapes. Like, it's a major
contribution to R&B.
Currently, not of they're not saying it's a Confessions or it's, you know, a Jodeci album. They're just saying, like, right now, this is like, some, put it this way, if we were to do a time capsule of 2010s.
They put that in the capsule?
Yeah, 100%. They put that in the capsule, 100%. Us, you, talk to Tory Lanez fans.
Be so for real.
What? They'd put on a capsule. But to get to the point, that, for me, I'm not going to say, that's what's wrong with R&B, but that, a lot of people will use that as the frame of reference and be like, yo, this is it. This is the sound. This is it. And that's the problem when I'm like, when you have real singers, real creative, because sometimes for me it's not necessarily about vocal ability. Because if I'm gonna compare two people in that dark R&B sound, I think Party is miles ahead of Tory.
But I don't know, man. Even in that though, I feel like that's the essence of R&B. That's kind of like saying for rap, you don't really need to be a good rapper, really. And you're gonna be the face of rap. You can be the face of rap, and you're not even a good rapper. Like, I think it would be a slap in the face if like someone's like, oh, we're putting this album in a time capsule and like, this is the face of R&B, and there's the vocals whack.
But remember, they did go through that period where, with the whole mumble rap stuff, where rappers are perfect parallel because there is that distinction there where you'll listen to someone and be like, and I like Young Thug, by the way, but people are like, yeah, Thug's the goal or Gunna's the goal or Red Tear Tear. I'm not listening to that. Perfect example, we spoke about Dochi. Somebody called Dochi's music Harriet Tubman music.
No, that's anti-black.
But that's the thing. But just based off like the aesthetics and stuff like that, we don't want to hear that rappity rap shit. We want to hear some. Do you know what I'm saying?
You don't want to hear me. You just want to dance. Shout out to Outkast. That's where we're at right now. You lot don't want to hear the vocals. You just want to vibe. You just want to vibe.
You just want to vibe, and that's why like, I feel like I bring this guy up on every podcast, but it's not. That's why the, hey, Drake makes songs for the gal narrative started coming up, because he made songs that were perfect for vibes.
Okay.
For the vibe stuff. And obviously people weren't dumb enough to put Drake in like R&B conversations, but he's like, he was very much him. I'll give Drake this. In terms of like the dark R&B sound. He's not a pioneer or anything like that, but he's very much ushered people's taste buds to be like, hey, this sounds cool. He was using Brandy, I Dedicate. He was putting John B all over his vocals, which sonically will take you down a path to Chicks Tapes. It's all connected.
It will take
you down the path to Chicks Tapes. And then when people listen to Chicks Tapes, be like, oh my God, this is real R&B.
That makes me so sad. No, that actually makes me so sad though. That really does. Because I'm like, no.
And the thing is, we heard it. Like I said, like, and the thing is,
we literally saw it live.
My comment section, it was like, when I said, yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of Chicks Tapes, it was like blasphemy.
Damn.
But that's just the subdivisions of the genre. And for me, it's like, I don't really have a conclusion when it comes to like my stance on this, because I feel like evolution is important and stuff like that.
100.
But I feel like I'm not going to say for a period of time we lost something, but that's why like I champion a Sasha Keeble, I champion an Elmeen so much, because especially Elm, these guys are singing.
Bringing back the talent and the vocals into the genre. It's amazing. It's so beautiful to see.
And also, I love this artist. This is not her. But I'm tired of the Jhené Aiko variants. And I'm tired of the whisper voice singers.
I wasn't a fan. Do you know what? I wasn't a fan. I actually wasn't a fan of the Bryson Tiller era. So PND, I don't really enjoy PND. I don't really enjoy Bryson. Don't really enjoy Black. Didn't really enjoy Jhené Aiko. I think I clocked out during that stage.
That's fair. I mean, it is crazy because Jhené is like, oh, just... I think Jhené would... The problem with the Jhené clones, right? Because I think...
Clones!
They're like, clones! The whisper singing... I'm tired of them. But with Jhené, for me, it was... I'm sure she's not the only person to do that.
Yeah.
But her voice was a breath of fresh air. The production was very airy, breezy.
Has Jhené done a tiny disc?
No, she'd be great, I wonder.
Yeah, okay,
She'd be great. Her production was very airy, very breezy. I liked it. But then what that did is like, yeah, so long as I, you know, have like an aesthetically pleasing voice, sure, I can do anything. And I'll just see people on TikTok. I just want to fly.
There's something wrong with you. Not the slander.
I don't like it. There's too many of them. Like,
I'm screaming. Like,
we need to bring back balance. But I feel like genuinely, in my R&B consumption right now, I'm excited. And yes, a lot of artists are from the UK. But genuinely speaking, the singers are singing, man. The
singers are actually singing. We've gone back to looking at the vocal ability and saying, this is fantastic. This is, when I come live to your show, I am in awe. Yeah, you're dancing around the stage, but also you are singing your pants off and it's fantastic. It's not just I'm there because this is a vibe. I mean, obviously, that's great too. But it's that addition now that it's like, oh my God, this is beautiful. I love it.
Yeah. Before we go,
yeah,
I want to, on the spot,
talk to me.
What are some of your favorite Tiny Desk performances?
The ones I go back to, we're really going to see the R&B head of it all. Maxwell's Tiny Desk.
That's a good one.
Was amazing.
Good one.
It was so good. I love Maxwell. So I thought that was good. Now I've just realized I've only got three. This is hard. Okay, I'm gonna do my three and then I want some honorable mentions. I want to be allowed to do. Cool. Hiatus Coyote.
Thank you.
It was so good. Tiny Desk.
Please, no. Can we talk about Hiatus Coyote, please?
I love them bad.
What, I can't remember. What's the main singer's name? I can't remember her name.
Oh, I forgot her name as well. Remember.
But her vocals.
Are you insane? Everyone alright?
The run she goes on.
That is what a blend is. That one, like, obviously, again, we're gonna sound like we're going all over the place. But I also love when people don't sit in any genre.
No.
And it's literally like, no, I'm not just gonna do this, right? I'm gonna be here and do that and do whatever. And Hiatus Coyote, what genre can you put them in?
You can't. Because they'll have my first discovery of them was like a song where it was just like an electric beat. It was like an electro techno beat type thing.
Yeah.
I didn't really deep, like, they even had a main singer until their last album where they released Everything's Beautiful. And I was like, hold on, oh, they got a single. I didn't know they had a single. Okay, let me go back. And then songs like Molasses.
Oh my God. Molasses and We Go Gentle. Sip into Something Soft.
Yeah.
Red Room, of course. We all love Red Room. Hiatus Coyote, that At Home Tiny Desk was amazing. So, okay, cool. Hiatus Coyote, Maxwell, and then Jasmine Sullivan.
I was gonna. I was literally like, Hiatus Coyote was like one of my top three. Yeah. So that one, Anderson .Paak.
Oh, that was amazing.
That was amazing.
Y'all don't stand a chance. That was too good. Yeah, that was great. He's talented as hell. Yeah.
And you know what? Kirk Franklin's one.
There.
Kirk Franklin's one, Melodies from Heaven is one of my favorite gospel songs ever.
Okay.
But when they did that, rain down on me, before
the day.
Kirk Franklin, it wouldn't be number one, but it's one that. So,
it's up there. So yours is Hiatus Coyote.
Okay, Kirk Franklin is more of an honorable mention. I'd say Hiatus Coyote, Anderson .Paak. There's so many in my head. Because I'm thinking about Usher.
Erykah Badu's one was fantastic. I think she only literally ended up doing like two or three songs, but it was so beautiful. Green Eyes, masterpiece. Masterpiece. Duran Bernard had a fantastic one.
He's sensational.
Shea Universe, we mentioned Shea's Tiny Desk. That was really good.
Yeah. Elmeen's Tiny Desk was really good.
That was good. I just love an Elmeen intermission because you never know what you're going to get.
Yeah, he's just going to...
Stops singing and he starts speaking, you're like, where are we going?
Yeah.
I don't know where we're going, but I trust you here.
I need to go to one of his shows.
He's really good.
I'll keep it safe and say Usher for now. That's the one that's coming to my mind. But the one I revisited recently the most is Hiatus Coyote's one. Because I'm just like... And a lot of people like might be weirded out by their aesthetics, but that's what I like. Because like... It's artistry. Like, they're a perfect fusion of just different things. And that's how you do a medley of different things.
I went to their show earlier this year and I was just in awe of where they took us. When you think you're comfortable and you're chilling and it's As We Go Gentle, And We Go Gentle. And then all of a sudden it's Telescope. And you're like jumping, all over the place. Get Sun. Like, you are... all over the gaff, and I love it. I absolutely love it. I'm trying to think of other honorable mentions for Tiny. Who would you want to see get a Tiny Desk?
Who would I want to see get a Tiny Desk? That's a good one. There's probably some that have. I'm not thinking right now. When she releases an album?
When this album or EP, Sasha Sweetheart? When you're ready? No, we did that yesterday.
Sasha Keeble, because she used to do like jazz before, right?
No, it was still very Under Your Skin or Under Your Skin, Treat Me Like I'm All Yours. Yeah, it's still soulful. It was soulful.
Soulful. But
she's been at this for time.
Yeah, a lot of people. There was even an old video I saw of Cleo Soul.
Cleo Soul used to... Do you remember Cleo Soul from High?
Yeah.
You got me feeling high. She used to do a different genre.
Again.
And now she's in her bag.
Again, on this podcast, I've beaten the conversation of infrastructure to death, but the infrastructure for some of the mismanagement. Oh, God. Hey.
Oh, God.
Hey. Man, it's splitting, man. Give me some aspirin. Oh, God. A lot of aspirin, but Sasha... Like, every time, just hit. I'm like...
This next one, Act Right. I think it's Act Right that she's dropping. She's teased that one. Sensational. Like, she gives a snippet and you're already like, run it.
Do you know what I like? Choirs. The choirs.
Yeah. Someone said it to me when I commented on it on TikTok and someone was like, it's her. It's just layers. But I actually do think it is a choir. It's a choir.
It's a choir because I remember there was a video where there was somebody recording there was like a group of people recording back.
Yeah, okay, fine. It must be choir then. Yeah.
Maybe some songs it's layering, but I think some songs it's definitely a choir. But her.
I need a Tiny Desk. I need a tiny desk from Sasha Keeble. I would like Destin to do a Tiny Desk.
Destin.
I think Destin Conrad, I would like to see him do a Tiny Desk and strip it back. Just let's hear you, babe. Love it.
No, he's definitely done. Donnell's done one, right? No. Donnell Jones, no?
Donnell Jones hasn't. Joe? Joe. Yeah,
no, Donnell Joe's used to do one. Bring the guitar. Just do it. When you love someone, you just don't treat them bad. Oh, I feel so sad
now that I wanna leave. That, yeah, okay. Donnell Jones.
But that's one of the greatest R&B albums ever.
Where I Wanna Be?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
One of the greatest albums
ever. Was that Life Goes On or Where I Wanna Be? Which album is it from?
I think that's Where I Wanna Be, I think.
Where I Wanna Be. Shit,
but Life. Yeah, cool. We got a
but yeah, no, carry on. But Life.
I'm trying to see. Internet. Where I Wanna Be. I think that is. I just saw it now. Hold on. Sorry, guys. I think that is, as I can see.
How you say CBDBDD on a song about cheating?
Where I Wanna Be.
It was Where I Wanna Be.
I know.
Life Goes On is my favorite album from him, though.
That's the second one, right? That one has like "Don't Leave" on it, right?
Don't leave, cause I really wanna love it. So what you gonna do?
I gotta get with you tonight.
And that's the thing. We knew the ad libs, and we knew the ad libs of the ad libs. We knew every corner of the song because there was that. I think songs were
even
a lot
My
fuller.
Heart has bangers as well.
My heart has got bangers.
This songs for my players in the hood.
No, this guy's got to know. It's just another day. But yeah, songs were fuller. Songs had little pockets and different things. It was just an entire production.
But to wrap it, to round it back, look what we're discussing. We went from one album to a second album. Discography.
Yeah, no, it's actually true. It's not just hits,
because these are album cuts.
Yeah, word.
It's discography. Word. So yeah, like...
He needs a tiny desk. I do agree. He needs a tiny desk, man.
He definitely needs a tiny desk, man. I'm trying to think of one more person who needs a...
So we went old, we went new. Maybe a group? No, is there a group that could... Maybe Flo. I would have liked this new album. I think this new album, AAA, Access All Areas, could have
I need to take in Flo a bit more.
Is it?
I'm impressed by their potential.
The actual
is good, but it's not blowing me away. But I think the sky's the limit for them. Like, their potential is ridiculous. Clear. It's just, for me, it hasn't quite met yet.
It hasn't landed yet for me.
Quite not.
Taking
not
a
yet.
AAA, yeah. I thought it was quite good.
First.
I thought that was deserving of a Brit.
What got the Brit instead?
What, for Brit R&B?
Yeah.
Ray. Tell me how many R&B songs she released last year.
I'm just happy for her.
I love Ray. Don't get me wrong. I love Ray. I think the Brits two years ago, that was her year. Yeah. She deserved it. That was her night. She is a ray of literal sunshine. I think it's just a bit disheartening when you have an R&B award. It's new. You see the nominees and it's like, okay, fine.
Yeah, but you're not really
representing the actual people doing R&B right now. And doing it well. But I guess that's just because of the terms and conditions to how you get a nomination. Yeah, it's just too rigid.
But yeah, because even when I fall into the chat sometimes, I'll see somebody black singing. I'm like, R&B? You're like, no.
She's just black and she sings.
She blacks and she sings.
Rachel Chinnariri speaks about that all the time. Yeah. Because it's like, no, I'm black and I sing, but I don't sing R&B. I'm not an R&B artist.
No.
You know, like...
Rhythm Ray and blues.
Ray has so many different patterns and different waves and flows that she goes in. I would not necessarily say that for the 2025 Brit Awards that she then should have been within the R&B conversation. There are others that should have been. But again, like I said, I think to get a Brit nomination, you have to have had a song or an album that made the top 40.
Yeah.
It's hard for R&B to do that right now.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, how do we change? Do they change the rules for R&B? Then it's like,
And also with R&B, like, especially when it comes to art artists, and I've mentioned this before, people are only going to start, and the Ray shouts for me is very retroactive praise, because
she's been doing this,
but I think now that she's really become like a figure in American music discourse, and I feel like it's retro. Oh, one of our own, calm. No,
that's LMA. That's LMA all over.
And it's been the history of Floretry get more love in the States than they do here.
So insane.
They are a British
import. Is it import, export?
Yeah. British export. Yeah. But we'll wrap it up soon. Don't worry. But yes, British export. The Floetry, I hear more people talk about Floetry And yes, of course, it's because of the artists they worked with, Rare Tete. Like, they're very much embedded in the neo-soul, like, rise of Rare Tete. However, they're our own, you know?
A real British
artist. Return of the Mac was made by a British artist.
Yeah.
And I feel like, again, it's an infrastructure thing of we need to, you know, either highlight our successes more or create a space where, yeah, this is the stuff that we've created.
Infrastructure. If there's anything you're going to take away from this, yeah, it's infrastructure. The one thing I didn't mention was that I was also part of a platform called Rhythm in Britain for like years, and we champion UK R&B. And like, there is, because, you know, the conversation is always, is it the fans? Is it that, you know, the platforms aren't doing enough? Is it the artist? What is it? Genuinely speaking, everybody has a part to play, but it's the infrastructure. Because platforms can't do what they want to do without money. And artists are going to want to, of course, be on the platforms that will have the most eyes. But the platforms that have that are the ones with the most money. So we're just doing this. We're just all going around. Because there are fans who want to hear the music. Those fans don't know where to, well, they're not looking hard enough, but they don't know where exactly to get that because there are the platforms aren't getting the push that they need. And it's just, yeah, it's sad. It's really sad.
Nah, I think that's a brilliant point to end.
Infrastructure.
Infrastructure. What are they, infrastructure? Melissa, thank you. Genuinely, again, sorry, I'm going to throw flowers at the end of you. Genuinely, like, you are one of the best people to like to do what you do, but more important, you're just one of the best people.
Thank you.
And genuinely, like, I wish, I not even wish, pray, and I will see, you know, the return on investment that you've made on yourself, the success, the double accolades,
double,
and I'll be like, that's my peoples. Yeah, I know her. But genuinely, like, it's been a pleasure. Tell the people where they can find you at, what you got going on.
Well, it depends on what you want to do. I'm
all of it.
All right, I'm over on the TikTok app I'm over on the TikTok app because obviously now you can't just like do your job. You've got to like basically show everyone you doing your job. But also, I just love to yap and show people what I'm doing. So that's at that Melis DEE. I am on Westside Radio 89.6 FM from Monday to Wednesday, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Monday is my Melis Monday Melody Days where I play UK R&B strictly. So make sure you tune in for that. I am also just everywhere at that Melis DEE. I host things regularly, R&B events, look out for those. And yeah, man, just here, find me. But I did want to say love for having me here. Love for even starting these conversations and bringing on creatives to talk. I think it's great that you don't just hone in on one area and like it gives so many different creatives a chance to come and speak about just a whole array of things. You know, you're doing amazing work. You're doing great work. You're doing important work and keep doing it, man.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
For real.
And all you brands that are watching. Yeah, book me. But book her. Book her for your event. Book us.
Book me, for real.
You know, book her because, trust me, she'll keep everyone entertained and smiling and everyone.
We've actually had so much that we had to talk about yet because we were talking about, like, we were going to talk about being a presenter and, like, things, having to operate on a business mindset.
Oh, yeah.
And not a creative. And we could touch on it quickly. I've got, like, 5 minutes. I'll tell her I'm coming. When you jump into the creative field, you do it because you love it, yeah? You do it because you're a creative person by nature, just by anything. And then you get into it and then you start realizing, oh, I don't just have to be a creative, particularly if you don't have a team. And of course, when you're starting out, you don't. And that's fair enough. You probably shouldn't at that time. But you have to start thinking a little bit differently. You have to start thinking about things you've never had to think about before. Like, okay, my rate. How do I calculate my rate? And when I'm calculating this, what's my margin? What can I really go down to? And you know, what's overselling myself? And how do I then negotiate this with brands and with independent people? And you start to have to put on another hat. It's now like another job that I'm starting to put on. And then it's like, okay, cool. How do I market myself? Like, the one thing that I find quite hard about this presenter journey in particular is having to consistently put on so many different hats, you know, like I am everything for myself and that's fine, that's great, but then it gets to a point where I'm like, I'm knackered. I still have 9 to 5, don't get twisted.
I think that's the struggle of like the creative business. I feel like all of us, hey, God forbid.
God's calling.
But no, I feel like as a creative, like we all come into this, you know, with just our pure desire and pure passion. Right. And, you know, for some people who are blessed and, you know, early on, that takes them to the moon immediately.
Yeah.
Shout outs to them. But for a lot of us, it's kind of like, okay, balancing like the ambition, the dream, with the reality. Mm-hmm. With the reality that these bills ain't gonna pay themselves. With the reality that I've got to sustain a living from this. And even people who are making money from this, the inconsistent nature of things, the chasing up the invoices, the living check to
it's
check,
hard.
The, you know, just whatever. And then also sometimes, especially as a black creative,
mm-hmm.
it can also feel like crabs in a barrel. Like your existence, yeah, might be, you know, you might be successful, but at the same time, brands are looking at you as an opportunity to take an opportunity from somewhere else, from someone else.
So
it becomes a thing of like now, a lot of the time in the creative industry, instead of fighting the system, we end up fighting each other as well.
It's so sad, but I think that's also a case of sometimes it's like, well, there's too many of you. Like we've already got a token black girl that speaks like this. We don't necessarily need another one. And that's obviously a mindset that has to change. But yeah, that can lead to like, well, I'm the one. Like this is something that I always say, there's room for everyone, you know. I honestly promise you, there is enough room for everyone to eat. Like right now, we have a lot of great, even just R&B presenters or R&B, people who talk about R&B and love R&B, tastemakers in R&B. There are a lot of us and there's space for more of us because there are enough opportunities to go around. The problem comes when it's kind of like, let's say it's, you know, like I was saying, if a brand's looking, it's like, oh, well, that's the one. That's it. We're done. Don't need another one. That's it. It's like, oh, okay. Well.
Yeah. It's just one of these things, especially because I feel like black British identity it's been a thing, but because of the presence of social media, like black people in the creative spaces, we are a force. We are like just like the amount of times that I can go on platforms and see our faces dictating culture.
Beautiful.
Because there was a point in time where, like, let's be honest, like when it came to representation, we watched American shows for a reason, because the only time I'd see a predominantly black cast of anything
was in an American set,
because the powers that be wouldn't allow, you know, our voices on television or our voices in mainstream publications. But now through the advent of social media, and even we're invading publications now. I see what Channel 4 are doing in terms of like getting all of these creators on screen, you know, for with that show with the kids and stuff like that. It's amazing. And I feel like we're in a space right now where, for a long time, we dictated culture, but our voices were being restricted.
Our faces weren't being shown.
Like, yeah. We were dictating stuff from behind the scenes, but now we're very much in the spotlight. But what happens when we're in the spotlight now is instead of some, I'm not saying all, because it's an infrastructure issue, like you said before, but instead of some of us blocking opportunities or trying to hold on to our share of the pie, hey, bring more people up with you. And I'm not saying
the door open once you open it.
Trust me. Because there's an album, Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes with Teddy Pendergrass, and there's a quote that sticks with me to this day. The same faces you see coming up are the same faces you're going to see coming down.
What a way to end it. Beautiful. Beautiful stuff. Lovely. Lovely.
But yeah, man. Honestly, well, like I said, love having you on the show.
I will be back.
No, I'm going to have you back for the tournament.
Like, yes. Oh my God. Yeah. I will love to do that for sure.
But yeah, man, make sure you like, share, comment, and subscribe. Make sure you follow us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. We are literally close to hitting 10K on TikTok.
Come on.
Very close to hitting 10K on TikTok. Help us reach 10K, follow, share, tell a friend, you know, make sure you check out Mel's page. And also, like I said, guys, this is a community. If you want anybody on the show, throw them in the comments. You know what I'm saying? I feel like one thing you said that applies to Love Soul, applies to connectivity, man.
Yeah, word.
Connectivity is so important, man. 100%. And I feel like, you know, the world's a happier place when we're all friends. But
let's
keep
building this community, for real. Let's keep building that community. But thank you for having me, man. I can't wait to come back.
Nah, man, anytime.
Now I'm about to go see Usher.
Yeah, I'm jealous.
As you should be.
But I saw Leon Thomas, that's fine. But yeah, this has been the Rare Podcast.
Too much.
We are signing out. Catch you on the next one. Peace.
Bye.